Hello, and yes, we're back. Let's talk ones and zeros. And can you believe the last time I did a podcast with the gang that used to join me was on the 14th of February in 2023? And I am telling you, so much has changed from back there in 2023 to now in 2024, and there is so much to talk about. Now, I know I haven't been on the podcast scene for a little while, but what I will say is I will be doing a podcast every couple of weeks now. Please look out for those. And I want to say thank you to everybody who is still subscribed to the channel. And hopefully, I'll be giving you a lot more updates in the tech space and bringing you a lot more engaging conversations about certain things. So I was sat back thinking, how would I kickstart this podcast all over again? And as I was thinking about that, I was reading a blog that one of my friends that I've known for a good handful of years has been writing. My friend Cecilia, I used to work with her, and she'll say more in the podcast herself. She's been writing blogs, and her blogs basically went down focusing on AI, artificial intelligence. And I reached out to Cecilia and I said, Cecilia, would you like to do a podcast about AI with me? She said yes, and I couldn't be even more happier because her blogs are amazing. So what I will do at the end is I will, after the chat with Cecilia, I will give you the link on where you can follow her as well. But I really, really hope that you enjoyed this conversation. I let Cecilia do most of the talking because this space is really interesting and she's really clued up on it. And and we talk about a few key options, and I'm hoping it's one of many podcasts that I do with her. But I'm going to go straight to it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And yeah, I'll chat to you all afterwards. Hello. How's it going? How are you doing?
Hi, Snoop. It's Julie. I'm going great. I'm so happy to be talking to you today. And I go so far back, and it's so fun to be talking to you in this different context for us.
Yes. And the context this time around is going to be all about AI, and really going to focus on that element. So I guess we'll go straight into it all. AI, what is it all about? It's the buzzword out there. Everybody's talking about it. If you don't mind just letting the listeners know, what is AI? What is it all about?
Yeah, definitely. So artificial intelligence is not a new technology, actually. People have been, especially in places like San Francisco, have been researching artificial intelligence for decades. It's only been within the past couple of years that AI as a term has kind of skyrocketed into the public landscape and public me era, like media. And AI is at its core, actually, machine learning. So in San Francisco, a lot of people will say, like, we'll use machine learning and AI kind of interchangeably. But this term AI is now, the most popular way to talk about it. But AI uses machine learning and pattern recognition to kind of make predictions of what we want to come next. So, for example, when you ask ChatGPT or another large language model a question, ChatGPT is then going into its vast, vast data set that it's been trained on, and is then making a prediction on the best possible outcome that is going to assist you with that goal. So at its core, right now it's about pattern recognition. AI doesn't have the power to reason or have empathy or emotion. Those are all things that people are, working on and hoping to achieve. But right now, it really is kind of this artificial intelligence. It's not real human intelligence yet. But and I would say also with where we are right now, we're kind of in what's called artificial narrow intelligence versus artificial general intelligence. So the term AGI is one that you'll hear a lot in this space. When are we going to reach AGI? What year are we going to reach AGI? And that's the question of when we're going to build an artificial intelligence that has general intelligence and can accomplish kind of a variety of tasks, can do kind of whatever a human can do, and is at that same level of being able to do many different things the way a human can can discuss a book and can also do laundry and can also walk your dog. It's one of these very different tasks. Whereas right now, as we know with the large language models that exist, they're all kind of designed for one specific purpose in mind.
Okay. Now, in terms of that space, and obviously you're covering on where it's at right now and what the end goal is, for somebody that's using it every day, I mean, what are the benefits? What are the negatives? I mean, where do you see AI going, and where do you think it should be going, if that makes sense? Like, is there anything that we should be concerned about, anything that we should be more focused on or educate ourselves more about?
So I'll break down that question. So firstly, around like how we should be using AI, I think that was the first part of your question, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
So, you know, I think a lot of people are using it, are using, and when I say it, I think it's mostly ChatGPT or another equivalent large language model like Anthropic's Claude or Meta's Llama, Google's Gemini. So, at its simplest terms, I think it's good to say like there's all these different options now of LLMs, large language models that you can use and trial. And I really encourage everyone to trial different ones instead of just using perhaps ChatGPT is the most popular. You really will get different results with them for different tasks. There's actually a great dashboard that you can look at that breaks down these different models based on what they're best at. And so what you should be using them for is whatever you feel like you are going to put into Google and spend a lot of time looking for results on. So I think one thing that is obviously being used a lot is just like information gathering and research. I think ChatGPT and these other LLMs are great for that. So doing research, pulling together different recipes, looking at different options for hotels. I think those are all really great use cases and for kind of your personal life. And then obviously you have all the workflows in your work life. That's kind of going to be nuanced from person to person. I think where it gets a little bit, it's just good to be aware and to really bring awareness to when you're using these tools, that we're not developing over-reliance on them, that we're not using them for the things that we uniquely can provide to our roles. Because we were hired into these roles or we're building these companies based on like our unique gifts and what we can bring and our talents. And you don't want to be outsourcing that to an AI that's providing the exact same answer to any other human, right? I think decision-making processes as well, it's really good to bring awareness to where am I perhaps leaning too far into leaning on AI to help me make a decision. Because at the end of the day, these are corporations who have built these tools. And you don't want to be, you know, necessarily relying on a corporate entity for the decisions you make about your life. There's also people I know who use AI as therapy, like as therapists. So the applications of these models and the various tools, not just kind of the big large language models, but a lot of tools are really quite endless right now. And I think it's really good to just be aware of what exists and then be aware of like how much you want to integrate those into your life while still retaining a really strong sense of autonomy over your core decisions and of your kind of like keeping yourself human, right? Keeping yourself like I know who I am and I know what I want, and I don't need to necessarily rely on an AI to make those decisions for me.
Okay, and then as you're saying that, do you feel that there there is a movement towards where people aren't making the right kind of decisions now. I mean, is there examples of that happening today? I mean, that's something new that I wasn't really aware that people are relying on it so much to actually make their decisions.
Yeah, I think a really good example of this is something I tried the other day with a couple of different LLMs was asking each model why I should use that model. So, for example, I asked Claude, why should I use Claude? Which Claude is Anthropic's model. Why should I use Claude over other competing LLMs? And what Claude actually responded with was, I won't give you I won't give you an answer to that. Something to that effect, I'm paraphrasing, but I won't give you an answer to that. I'm Claude. I'm just an AI created by Anthropic to promote to that's like helpful, honest, and harmless. And it was urging me to try out different models for myself and wasn't going to give me a straight answer to that. However, when I asked the same question to ChatGPT, it gave me immediately spat back a lot of different answers about why I should choose ChatGPT over other models. And I think that like is a good metaphor for how you can look at the tools that you're using. And Claude, for example, is just putting the decision making back on the human. It's putting the ownership of the choice onto the human. In that one singular example, ChatGPT was kind of giving the immediate answer that you were asking for, despite the fact that it could sway a consumer without helping them to do due diligence on their own. So I think, does that answer your question? It's kind of a helpful metaphor for
Yes,
how
it does. Yeah,
they,
it
yeah.
does. Yeah. I mean, I've not used Claude myself. I've used other models, so that's quite interesting. I might actually give that a go
Yeah.
myself at some point and obviously see what it says. So obviously there's a big buzzword for people that are in more in the know where they talk about ethical AI. When we are talking about ethical AI, what exactly are we discussing in this space? Well, what are we trying to achieve, and what exactly does it mean?
Right. Yeah. So I think the easiest way to think about ethical AI or AI ethics is looking at how AI is going to impact society. And that is like at the very broadest level. When you drill down into AI ethics, there's various kind of applications of AI ethics. There's frameworks that companies can implement to ensure they're innovating ethically. There's the AI ethic or this there's the ethics of the data sets that companies have used to train their models. So data privacy is a huge kind of pillar within AI ethics, right? ChatGPT was trained on millions of people's work without their consent or compensation. And now it's being used again without their consent or compensation. As we're kind of seeing with the Scarlett Johansson example debate with OpenAI. And so AI ethics really it doesn't urge the stifling of AI innovation. It doesn't say, hey, AI is bad. The framework or the stream of thinking is we're creating this technology and we want to do so in a way that is ethical, that is fair, and that really keeps the most vulnerable members of society at the forefront and make sure that we're not creating something that is going to be detrimental to children, to minorities, to people who just don't have as much of a voice in this technology that's being created. And an example of that is, AI bias. I think that's been a big topic pertaining to AI ethics that companies have, now done a lot of work on and is actually swinging too far into kind of the reverse. So Google's Gemini, for example, is kind of, I don't know if you've seen now, is generating when you ask it for a picture of the forefathers, the US forefathers, for example, it's now generating the forefathers in like various skin tones that aren't actually factual or representative of history. So their companies are doing work in that space. But AI ethics at its core, yeah, is really about being proactive, implementing frameworks that ensure AI is being created ethically and then also used ethically as well. And that kind of speaks back to what I was saying around decision making and not creating products that harm. Yeah.
Cool.
And one more thing, actually, I'll just add because I like this analogy. It kind of speaks, I think, an easy way for people to think about this is when doctors in the US at least take an oath, they take the Hippocratic oath, right? They say, I am in a position of power and I promise to do no harm. I vow to do no harm. It's kind of like that for tech companies. So it's them taking the ownership, saying, I'm in a position of power and I'm going to vow or do my best to do no harm. Because when you, and this speaks a little bit to AI safety, but when you think about the power that doctors have, or another analogy, an example I like is when the COVID vaccine was being developed and tested and released, it had to go through so many different levels of testing, right? And there was different tiers of what was acceptable before it was released into society because it's a massively societally changing thing. And AI and technology is as well, but there's no system of checks and balances to kind of ensure that this massive societally changing initiative will not impact the people it's using. But that speaks a little bit more to AI safety.
So the next question I have is, when it comes to the time and moment that we're in right now, and when I mention time and moment, I'm talking about when the internet first came and it just went wild and we kind of lost control. Then afterwards, people were trying to rein that back in. Same with social media, it was out there, and now we've got government and other people trying to obviously rein that back in. Do you feel that we could potentially end in the same situation where it may go out of control? Or, if that is the case, what needs to be done now to ensure that we're on top of it?
Yeah, that is, it's such a powerful question. I think a lot of people are in a place right now where, yeah, we are in a reckoning moment with social media, for example. And I think this is a really good moment to take stock of what's happened with social media and to look at our response time to the negative and detrimental effects of social media, and then look at our current moment and position with AI and think about, okay, how can we do things differently? When we look at the rates of teenage suicide and teenage mental health decline, it has gone up kind of in direct correlation since 2010, which was when social media really started to, it's when Instagram started becoming popular. And there's a really good method of thinking here, which is how can we measure where we are right now with society's markers of like health and success, so that, and continue that measurement so that when and if AI does cause teenage mental health to plummet even further, or when it causes people to become incredibly unhappy and causes massive unrest because of job disruption and job loss, we can immediately attribute it to effects caused by the technology. Because oftentimes, we just don't get the same level of recognition when we don't have those exact measurements from before. It's a lot of like, oh, we don't know for sure. We don't know definitively that social media, for example, is causing these like the mental health issues. But now we do, right? We really do. There's been a lot of research and a lot of really smart people who have worked on this problem and we can definitively say that social media has directly caused these detrimental effects on our kids. And so with AI, I think another thing I'll speak to on this is incentives. So when we look at why and how products are launched into the free market, it's often with the incentive of driving up customer growth, revenue, profit, kind of at all costs. And it's not with the incentive of creating a product that like genuinely improves the health of our society. And I think with AI, there's so much power and possibility and promise of this technology to do so much good in the world, right? It's like you can't be anti-AI because it will truly Like, it will truly make so many lives better. It will save us so much time. It will truly solve some of these diseases that are causing illness and death, but it will also cause a lot of negative and detrimental effects. And when we look at the incentives with AI, it's like, how can we change what those incentives are so that we're not just focused on profit and growth at all costs, so that we're not just focused on like who can reach AGI first. And it's a complicated topic when you take into context geopolitical issues, but I do think there's the need that we are looking at those incentives and we are looking at kind of the markers of our society's health, taking really careful measurement of that and trying to ensure that we're looking very closely at what AI could be responsible for so that we're not constantly in this like reactive mode, right? We're always in this reactive mode, like, oh, we've released this social media platform and now we realize that it's really dangerous. And now we realize that we're all super addicted to our phones instead of realizing, like, oh, this is happening right now and trying to mitigate it, which is a difficult task given the pace of regulation, but we have to at least try.
Yeah, of course, we do, we do. And are there things in place now, or do you feel that we have the right things in place now, or is there more work that needs to be done to make sure we kind of get everything together? I mean, are we in a position where we are on top of it, essentially?
No, we are not on top of it. We are not on top of it. It's a very delicate and careful dance between regulation and innovation, especially in the US, in Silicon Valley. Being able to innovate freely is really like inherent to our culture, to who we are, and therefore there's no regulation in place to ensure that we're creating and innovating ethically and in a way that is responsible. I could see that changing. There's something called AI governance, which is the idea, or which is the practice of companies looking at how they're implementing AI and like really having a strong and robust program in place for governing that use, for having benchmarks and of their kind of how they're using it and making sure that it's ethical. And I could see a world where all companies need to report on that they're required to have an AI governance platform in place. But that doesn't exist right now. And so right now we're just really seeing the ownership on the tech companies themselves. So it's all kind of up to self-regulation at this moment in time. And I just it's when you look at again like the analogy of the COVID vaccine and rolling something like that out, it just makes sense to have a system of checks and balances for these kinds of things, which we don't have right now.
Okay, no, that I agree with. I mean, to have these checks and regulations is key for sure. And it is quite scary when you obviously talk about it in depth. And I mean, with the individuals that you have spoken to, so I've got two questions. So the first one is, what is the general misconception and fear that people have about AI that you've come across generally? And the second question is, what drew you within this space as well? I mean, what was it that you thought, right, this is something that I need to focus my time on?
Yeah, I think I'll start with the second question. So I grew up in Cupertino, California, which, if anyone who's listening has an iPhone, Cupertino is the city on your weather app that you that will appear when you first open your iPhone, and that's because that's where Apple computer is. I grew up with my backyard leaning up against Apple computer. Like my elementary school was gifted computers by Steve Jobs at the time when they had just released the, I forget the name of it, but there was the blue and purple Macs, the ones that you can kind of see through, the translucent ones. And I tell these stories because I grew up in the heart of this like innovation at a time when the internet had just been invented. There was massive like creative thinking and innovation happening all around me, and it was really exciting. And I didn't really know anything else. I kind of thought this is how it was everywhere. And then later in my 20s, I spent 7 years living abroad and traveling abroad. And I got out of that bubble and I witnessed the impacts that primarily the Silicon Valley, of course, there's other tech hubs as well, but primarily the Silicon Valley had on the rest of the globe. And in particular, I remember being in Thailand and witnessing a lot of young kids holding phones, and they were just chained to their phones, and clearly just really suffering from digital addiction without even being aware of it or knowing it. And I just remember looking at these kids and thinking about what I knew about Steve Jobs and realizing that, he probably never would have wanted or intended for this to be the end result of his creation. And like I used to just sit with that in college. I wrote like a column around tech ethics. It was just always something that felt really important to me, like more important than other people. I was always the person who was urging everyone to get off their phone at college when that's all anyone wanted to do is be on their phone. And I didn't really know why. And then when I went to go work in tech, I chose to work at a company that I think is doing really great and purposeful work and striving to create products that genuinely improve the lives of their customers. But I ultimately got to a place where I felt too compelled by what was happening back home. I was living in London at the time, back home in San Francisco, to ignore it. And so I moved back and just kind of delved into this world because I think it's too urgent. It's super urgent that we make sure we get this right. And I think about those kids, again, the kids in Thailand, like chained to their phones. And I think that's kind of just at this point, that's the least that could happen with AI, right? We can see a lot more dangers that could happen to and impact our relationships and our children and our sense of fulfillment, and all of these things are just really important that we work on and get right. And so that's kind of why I came back and really feel like it's my life's mission to be impacting the space. And then when it comes to fear, like the number one fear and misconception, I think, well, two answers to that. I think the first one is it's not really a fear or misconception, but it's this overemphasis on when are we going to reach AGI? Like, when are we going to reach artificial general intelligence? There's it in the Silicon Valley and San Francisco bubble, that is the biggest question. And it is such an important one. But for me, I guess I question why we're so focused on when exactly, and not more focused on how can we solve the problems that we're seeing with AI right now. Because the problems that exist right now within AI, like, we will only perpetuate in AGI. Because if we don't fix them right now, they're going to be kind of built into AGI. And then when we build AGI, those really, really smart AGI systems are then going to build even more intelligent AGI systems. And that's when some talk about the potential for a human loss of control. And so it's so important right now that we are looking at the problems that exist, like bias, like how this is going to impact the most vulnerable members of society, and building programs that will mitigate some of those issues.
So, if people want to learn more, follow you, what would they need to do? Where would they need to go?
So yeah, thanks. Great question. I write and publish a weekly Substack called Remaining Human with the AI and Remaining Capitalized. I started the Substack as a way of really just asking questions, because I think all the space is right now is questions. No one actually knows like what is going to happen. And I also started it with the intention of breaking down AI for people who aren't technologists, who aren't like as interested in AI, right, as a lot of us are. They're just kind of living their lives and know that it's something that they should care about, but or should at least know about, but perhaps, haven't found a way into that yet. And then the emphasis with remaining human is creating a space, a community space where we can discuss together, like how do we want to be humans in the future? Like, how are we going to find a sense of fulfillment if a lot of our work tasks are being automated by AI? How do we want to live alongside potentially at-home robots who are doing our laundry? Like, it's really a space for us to talk about some of those things, because even though they seem really futuristic and quite sci-fi, they're really a lot closer than we think. So yeah, you can follow, or you can go to ceciliacallis.substack.com to find that, or just Google search remaining human, Cecilia Callis Substack, and you should be able to find it pretty easily. And you can subscribe for free, and hope you guys follow along.
Yes, and I will definitely share it as well in the links. So please do follow. It is a great read. I follow it myself, and hence why this podcast has come about. But no, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate that. And hopefully we can jump onto another podcast with some more updates within the AI space.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much, Snoop. This has been so great to talk to you, and I hope, yeah, it's been helpful. And if anyone wants to follow up with anything I've said or reach out, you can also do so through Substack, or find me on social media.
Cool, brilliant. Thank you. Take care.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
So there we go. That was such a great chat with Cecilia, and just hearing her talk about that AI space and talking about a few key issues here or there, it was great. It was absolutely great, and I really enjoyed it. And I hope all of you enjoyed it too. Now, as Cecilia said, she has a Substack. It's called Remaining Human. The link to that is ceciliacallis.substack.com. So that's Cecilia. So CECILIACALLAS.substack, which is SUBSTACK.com. Definitely follow her blog. It's just great. I couldn't recommend it. It's one of the blogs that I read religiously whenever she releases something. But I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and until next time, take care.